Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 472 of the JV Club with my first June boy of summer, James C. Some of you may know James as the Cabbage Merchant from Avatar The Last Airbender. Others of you may know some of his prolific other acting and voiceover work. The main thing that I talk about with James as we dig into teenage years is the YA novel that he has recently released. I love it so much. It's called All Kinds of Other. We talk about it on this episode as well as a bunch of other stuff. He is so delightful. Oh my gosh. Longtime listeners of the podcast, you are going to really get why I sort of freak out at some of the references that he makes because they are so near and dear to my heart. So please enjoy this episode. Happy Pride Month. And I'm sending you lots of love from Europe, where I am as you're listening to this.
I've had all sorts of feelings about this upcoming podcast.
You have?
Yeah, it's like,
you have?
I thought, oh my.
Like, what am I going to, what are the depths I'm going to try to plumb?
No, like, oh, I think I'm going to break this podcast. Like, this is the one interview after 987 interviews. She'll be like, no, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm finished. I'm done. This was such a horrific shit show.
That case, I wish I would have saved you till 500. That feels like a really good time to just go, like, I wipe my hands of
me. Well, yes. My question to you is, how do you do this? How do you do this? So many interviews. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, after a while, I think it's just, and I don't want to write it off by saying it's habit forming, because that definitely sounds like, who cares, and I'm just doing it out of rote, you know?
Yes.
But it is like a positive habit, which is to say that I made the commitment to record an episode every week as much as I could. You know, there's obviously a handful of weeks through the year that, like, it just, something comes up and I end up reissuing an old episode. But for the most part, it definitely hovers around 45 episodes or 50, like almost 50 per year. But it's just like, that's part of my week now. You know what I mean?
But
it's just sort of, and then, or I can do a bunch in a few days and then go off and work on something and know that I have them banked and ready to go. But I am so interested in people.
Are you really?
I'm so interested in people.
There's never that moment where you're like, okay, this is talking about family 6B that I know. I'm, you know, like, okay, now they're going to talk about the blah, blah, blah,
really?
Blah, blah.
Really?
No?
Not really. Especially, and there are episodes where, you know, we barely get into teen stuff. And then there are episodes that, you know, I hardly know anything about the person except their teenage years. Because we just go in hard and fast. But it's always different. And you know, there's just always something, like, I get excited when I hear a kernel that is reminiscent of a past guest, and I sort of connect those dots because I think, oh, my long-term listeners are going to make that connection. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know. I really like it. But let's stop talking about me for a second. I got to tell you,
yes.
I love your book so much.
Oh, you read it.
I'm not finished with it.
Okay.
I don't want to give too many spoilers, but if I say nurse's office post donut holes,
that's where I am right now. You're in deep.
I love it, James. You're such a wonderful writer.
Thank you. It's so lovely.
It's so good, and it's funny. Like Jules, this Jewel stuff, and the Adam, I don't want to give too much away, but like, the alternate personas that do the show are so funny and wonderful. And, you know, Jules' perspective and the sort of wry humor, it makes me feel like, again, like, I don't know your personal friendship voice in friendships because I don't know you well yet. But the humor feels like you can't make that up from nowhere. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like that's all you, the sort of like wonderful sort of tucked under, you know, moments of like, well, it could be like, it's just so charming, and I just love it. And it's heartbreaking, you know, it's because I do have that feeling all the time about teenagers. Like, I'm always worried about them, not in like a helicopter mom way, but just in that, like, oh gosh, what's the perfect balance of like adversity versus support versus, you know, how much do you want them to have to go through? Of course, you don't want them to go through anything, but then these amazing, fierce phoenixes rise out of some of the toughest bullying.
Exactly.
And so I just like go back and forth in my head every freaking day about stuff like this when I'm reading a book like yours. And so I'm just so excited and curious to, because, you know, I know you have a kiddo and
right.
I just want to, you know, so I definitely, obviously very excited to talk about you. But I also, I'm so interested in talking about the book. Again, I cannot highly recommend it enough. So I don't want to like get too into plot stuff because I really want people to read it or listen to the audiobook.
But I guess I would say
partly narrate.
Yes. Oh, and by the way, the second narrator who reads
yes.
Jack is,
yes.
he is amazing. His name is Sean Dasani.
Yes.
And he's just
And then you have
great.
Rain
yes.
doing
yes.
the yeah. Okay. I bought the body of
okay.
Don't worry. I just am all in. I'm all in.
I mean, I would definitely say that I as far as like my voice versus the book's voice, I am definitely more of a Jules, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say a lot of the Jack sections are my son. My son has that level of snarkiness /
yeah,
vulnerability.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The Jules is, that's the closest to me. Like the Jules stuff is I think how that's the most, for me, identifiable about how my brain tends to work.
Oh, really?
And
why?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I just, that's the humor. Like I wish I could give you a specific example. I wish I had the book in front of me. I'd flip through and find something because you just said something. I mean, you know, the whole like dressing up for Halloween and sort of his experience of trying to like, to have this self-awareness, to have a sense of humor about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In just the way that you write him, I think is just, it's just lovely.
And it's lovely. The insecurities also are very
sure.
me that, you know, not
for sure.
Not
and
being
using
sure.
humor, you know, even internally sort of using humor to defend yourself, but also to sometimes diffuse stuff like,
right.
you know, like if I can, like maybe if I can make myself laugh about the situation I've put myself into, even if it's all going on up here, there's something about that where you've created this kind of part of you that's like, hey, buddy, like, don't be too, like, look, this is, I mean, you can see it from the outside. You can see, yeah, that's kind of funny. Like, do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's wonderful.
Not to get too much into it, but did you find the Tumblr sections
mm-hmm.
hard to read?
No.
I'm just wondering. Because I think it's a generational thing. There are some readers
yeah,
who are
yeah.
like, I can't read it. It's too difficult. And
yeah.
and I would say to them, you've never read texts from teenage
right.
boys. Where it's like,
for sure,
you know,
for sure.
where you're looking at it and you're like, wait, is there a question here? Is there something you want? I have no idea what you're saying. I don't know what your intonation is. Because they don't use
yeah.
punctuation and they just kind of
right.
run on. So
yeah.
I was trying to get
No,
that.
And I would say to that person, like, feel free to listen. You could read along with the audiobook if you want to. If you want to just fast forward through to the tumblers, you can just enjoy, you know, Sean's, you can enjoy Sean's, you know, wonderful rendering of it, and you'll feel like there's all the punctuation you need. He holds your hand right through that. It takes you right where you need to go.
I mean, it was great as far as like this, you know, this podcast does talk about teenage issues and challenges. And
and
I'd say writing this book has allowed me this glimpse into today's teenagers, you know,
yeah.
and plus having a teenager, you know, a teenage son. So
yeah. how old's your son?
He is 20, about to become 21. I can't believe it.
Oh my gosh.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And he's going to NYU. He's
that's fabulous.
But, you know, I got to witness firsthand that horrible middle school going to high school, you know, where mm-hmm. you don't know who you are. Hormones are raging. You don't trust your parents, but you don't trust anyone else. You're just kind of feeling isolated. So that was very easy to write because, you know, we had gone through it.
Yeah. But also, you know, even if you're a person who doesn't have kids and just remember being a young person,
mm-hmm.
I want to encourage everyone, you know, it is not there. It is universal in the way that, you know, all timeless things are, whether the technology changes, rest assured you're going to identify with these characters, which I think is, it's comforting in a way, but it's also troubling because you, because you're sort of reminded that like, there's just always, may always be something that others, there's going to be somebody is going to be in the place where in their life or whatever going on with them, they're going to other somebody and maybe it was this thing yesterday and it's this thing tomorrow, but you know, we're definitely going to be confronting that. I think, you know, we're not a perfect, we are so far from being a perfect species that, you know, it's so messy. Before I go any further, I just want people to know a little bit about the story itself. Cause now I'm like dropping so many breadcrumbs that people are going to be like, my mind is swimming. What's going on? At least let's put, Janet, please put this in context. So this is a story that takes place essentially present day, right? Is that fair to say? And it takes place at a high school in Los Angeles, a public high school in Los Angeles. We have a couple of really key characters who meet for the first time and have the experience of crushing on each other and then having, you know, information about one of their pasts kind of come to light, which is, by the way, everyone's adult fear about YouTube.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, no, it lives forever. Like, what if you just, you know, how is this going to affect me later? What if I don't, you know, and we worry about kids posting stuff and, you know, how are they going to handle it if like, this gets used against them in some way?
And it will.
It's just a different ammunition. And so that's where I am. I'm in the place in the book where for you know, all of you who haven't read it yet, where the secret's out and we are finding out how that's going to affect the character whose secret it was and how it's going to affect the character that we spend, I guess, most of... No, that's not
no,
true. We spend
half
equal
half.
Time with both of them. Yeah. We spend equal time with both of them. We start out spending more time with Jules and then we sort of switch over and hear more from Jack. But I don't know what's going to be resolved. But
there are big things coming at your way.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And I love it. And it makes me cry. You know, I'm just like... I'll just have tears splattering.
Well, that's my goal. My goal in life is to get Janet to cry. So I'm very happy.
You needed to. I think you had me at like page two. So you're fine.
And when you talked about your fears of how kids are, that's where like the parents came in. Because usually with a lot of YA books, the parents are either perfect,
right,
or they're non-existent, and we just deal with children's lives. But for me, being a parent, I think that component was really important, not mostly to show the various ways that you could really screw up, you know? There are many different ways to screw up parenting, and I've probably done most of them. So it was important for me to show, like, no, because, you know, we're of a generation, or I'm of a generation where... there are a lot of new issues out there. And if you try to stay in your own mindset about sexuality and gender, then you are going to be completely closed off to this conversation that is happening now. And that's really detrimental to your child, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it's really, I mean, that's something that I would love to talk more about because it can be sort of a hot button issue even within the LGBTQIA+.
Whoa, you got all the letters, all of them. You get an honorary flag for Pride. Congratulations.
Baby, I get a real flag for Pride. So this idea of like, you know, this idea of being very, of being queer.
Yeah.
Of an adult who feels like they're queer positive and then is confronted with a trans situation and you're like, oh, I'm seeing where... Mm-hmm. And again, it's this sort of new identification of borders. It's a sort of new definition of borders because there was a time where, you know, publicly no, like no kid would tell their parent and no parent would ever accept this thing about them.
Yes.
And then, you know, back in the day, it was like as bad to be a woman who wanted to wear jodhpurs as it was to be gay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you might as well have been, like they were both just awful. And then there's a time when it's okay to tell your parents you're a girl who wants to wear pants. And then there's a time that maybe you can tell your parents that you're in love with another girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe, I'm using obviously female identifying stuff right now, but so this idea of like the evolution of parents and what they're afraid of and where their phobias and their fear meet, it's so rough. And it's, I think, you know, having compassion for those parents and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can't stop saying like meet someone where they are, but don't leave them there, because that was said to me once. And it's just such a hopeful perspective. But, you know, this like... I think at this point, we've all heard a story, known someone or seen depicted
mm-hmm.
the story of the parent who's like, it's not that I don't want you to be gay. Let's just use gay mm-hmm. as the example for right now. It's that I'm so worried about what will happen to you.
Right.
I'm worried. I'm fine with it. But like, what a mixed message. Do you know what I mean? I'm fine with it. But if you could just keep it hidden, I'm so worried that someone will beat you to death.
And
if you could just.
Right. And
you know what I mean? And it's understandable.
But it's also it's also a matter of even the most liberal people in Los Angeles. I've run across this many times, even among my gay male friends. They. You know, some of them are like, oh, but pronouns. Oh, come on. Can we just not do that? They're willing to go so far, but they don't. At some point, like it's as if a door has shut on their willingness to be to understand new things. You know,
right.
they have such an identity of I'm liberal, I'm progressive, I'm on the right side of things. And then when they're confronted with, oh, I don't understand this, and I actually probably, you know, committed a microaggression towards this person. It's very difficult for them to reconcile the fact that they have learning to do, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. And yeah, it's, and then you add, you stir in the ingredient of, you know, like the having the conversation about kids being trans is mm-hmm. new.
Yes.
That doesn't
absolutely.
Mean that it's new to be trans
right.
by any stretch of the imagination, but it's new. And so when you take new, different, and kids
right.
and put that in a mixing bowl, you know, people get real nervous. And then you start having, you know, these blowouts on social media where, you know, a celebrity says something that is patently transphobic, but it's also mixed in with like concerns that real parents actually have
right.
about their kid
mm-hmm.
and really thinking like, you know, if you know, again, I'm not a parent, and it's very easy for me to sort of not worry about that stuff. Again, like my cousin, who's like my brother, I don't have siblings, he is my brother, you know what I mean? My dad was very much like his dad,
mm-hmm.
Is trans, and that's been a part of my life for a long time. I had, you know, identifying as lesbian cousin in my life
mm-hmm.
for my life, and then he transitioned quite some time ago, and does a ton of work with trans youth, and all that being said, like, I totally understand a parent who's like, well, I would be worried about my 9-year-old shooting up heroin. Why can't I be a little worried about my kiddo wanting to start taking, you know, starting to talk about testosterone or whatever, when I'm still, as a parent, going like, whoa, whoa, whoa,
right.
what?
Well, and which is why.
And that's so parents need to have a safe place where they can ask that.
Right.
And I think most places are safe. It's just the frickin' internet and social media. It can become so combative all the way around.
And also how governmental leaders can use that fear to
yes.
to gin up fear, to make it a maelstrom of
absolutely.
Fear.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I would say
and that's... I feel so dangerous.
Yeah.
I feel so dangerous to be like, we're making progress.
Right. No, and then...
When you express this thing, I'm worried that it gives this landslide of stuff that we're barely pushing back
right.
the opportunity to flood everything and undo all the work. So it's a messy time.
It's very messy.
It's a beautiful struggle. It's a messy time. It's, you know what I mean? I just always try to tell myself it's growing pains. It's growing pains. Even, you know, my own moments of slipping and not doing anything on purpose, but getting a pronoun wrong, I'm always so horrified.
Yeah, same with me.
Then you don't want to like draw attention to it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a whole thing, but it's like coming from a place of growth, I think, right?
I'm seeing trans rights are at the kind of same point as gay rights were in, I'd say, maybe 1979. And, you know, we saw the same things. When I was growing up, there was Anita Bryant and the, you can't let gay people teach your children. Let's have that fear. Let's put that fear into all the parents' minds. Oh, those, they're trying to groom you. They're going to assault your children. And it's the same arguments that are trotted out now for trans people in bathrooms and things like that. It's ginning up that we don't understand it, and so it must be bad.
I know. The bathroom thing is just like,
it's heartbreaking.
That was one of the hardest ones because it was the most preposterous. Just in the sense of like, what are you doing, guys? No.
Yeah.
You think this is the, I'm sorry. You think this is the danger to your children?
Right. And who is more at risk here? The trans kid? Or the kid who is a cisgendered kid, you know? Who is going to be more likely to be bullied and hurt?
Yeah. That was just the like, oh my gosh, we're so eager still to, I mean, it's so sad that like the compassion kicks in, that it's so sad that we are so afraid to confront how ordinary it is to do evil or to do bad because bad was done to you, that we are constantly desperate to find somebody different who must be the culprit.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, honey, straight daddies are doing it to their daughters a lot more than a trans woman in a woman's bathroom.
Right. Yes.
Like, what are you doing? But it's like, oh, it's out there.
Right.
It's out there. And I'm so proud of our species for at various paces making progress in acknowledging those things. And I, you know, I look at the conversations happening about mental health now and even just how much more out there they are than when I was a teenager.
Yes.
And I'm so happy and so pleased and so hopeful. But we just have a long way to go.
And don't you think that the media, in as far as like TV shows and movies, because there's more, I think, more diversity now, you can look at issues like mental health and trans rights. And you could, you know, that's the first step in empathy, is being able to see it and understand, oh, this is what they're going through.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
And the three of us host The Flophouse. It's a podcast where we watch a new bad movie and then we talk about it.
Dan, you say it's hosted by the three of us. We've had a lot of great guest co-hosts like Gillian Flynn, Jamel Bowie, John Hodgman, Jessica Williams, Wyatt Cenac, Joe Bob Briggs, Josh Gondelman, Roman Mars.
Yeah, and you said new movies, but what about the time we did Meatballs 2?
Okay. Yeah, sometimes we do older movies and sometimes we have guests, but mostly it's about us talking about like recent bad movies.
And don't forget about the ones where I made you do a role-playing game where you played cartoon dogs.
All right, yeah. But
shouldn't a promo be a really simple explanation about what our show's about? So what's the show about, Dan?
What's it about?
What's it about?
It's about friendship, all right? It's about our friendship and how we love each other.
The Flophouse. It's a podcast mostly about bad movies on Maximum Fun.
All right, let's talk about your teenage years. We've talked about what we see today.
Wow.
We've talked about your beautiful and wonderful novel, All Kinds of Other is the name of it. Please tell me I didn't like suddenly make up a name that I...
That's perfect. That's the name. Available where books are sold.
I've read hundreds of pages of it. If I get the name wrong, I don't know what I'll do.
It's called Electric Boogaloo, actually. And I don't know how you got the all kinds of other things.
But I don't know either.
Electric Boogaloo.
I don't know either. How odd. But, you know, so how much, when you're writing something like that, using that as a kind of segue, are you kind of calling back? Because that's what we do. We compare. We remember. We, you know, think about what our own experiences were like. Was that part of the experience for you? Was sort of, or were you separating yourself from your own memories of high school as you're writing about this contemporary high school? Were memories of your own kind of coming into play, or were you living more in this world and it wasn't about James and his past?
I think as an author, you can't help but put your DNA in whatever you're doing, no matter how distant it is from your personal experience.
I mean, I hope that people do, but I don't want to
project
that.
I think it's almost impossible not to have the book's light shine through your prism.
Yeah.
Because if you're making it personal at all, if you're putting stakes into it.
Right.
So while I did a lot of research with, you know, interviewing kids and going to LGBT centers to kind of interview trans kids too, the emotions are always the same. That, you know, the longing, the feeling like an outsider, those are things that, you know, I can easily draw upon. And so hopefully that infuses the characters with a very real sense of those emotions.
It absolutely does. Where did you go to high school?
Columbia High School in New Jersey. So I'm in like the Maplewood area. It's like near the Oranges and just a path ride away from New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it a public school?
Yes. It was all public. And
was it a big school?
Yeah, it was pretty big. No, so here's the thing, Janet. This is your big challenge. This is your very huge challenge. It's very difficult for me to access my childhood. It's like I learned through my childhood that memory is dangerous and it's best to forget. And so it's interesting. I've been kind of grappling with this because, you know, as a writer, you'd think you need to draw upon your past, but it's in the most shredded kind of old yellowed parchment that is going to blow away as soon as you kind of look at it. As soon as you open to that page, it's starting to crumble already, which is very disconcerting. But what happens is then it transitions so that through my writing of fiction, suddenly I'll get memories. But it's a memory that is changed and shifted into fiction. But the emotions are there. So, for instance, my first book was Still Life Las Vegas. And when I'm writing it, it's about Las Vegas and a journey and people who have a religion of being statues. The main person is that there's this woman who has abandoned her child and is, you know, going to Las Vegas for a pilgrimage to see Liberace. So it's nothing that I did. And I didn't think it was about me at all. And then it was only after I was reading it and reading reviews that I realized, oh, this is everything about me. This is about a child who was abandoned by his mother.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't see it at the time. Maybe I didn't allow myself because it was too dangerous, right? So yeah. So through those fantastical images and metaphors, oh, this is all about me coming to terms with my mother who left when I was 5. So it's very interesting how authors can trick themselves into believing that it's not about them, but in reality, it's all about them.
That is amazing. It's amazing that it made it all the way into other people's hands and that sort of hearing it.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the amazing thing about art, too, is the community aspect of it. When it leaves you mm-hmm. and goes out into the world and becomes so many different things to so many different people, that's, you know, I hate to use the word humbling because I feel like it's kind of trite now, but I feel like that is an occasion in which it is probably most apt, mm-hmm. just because you're sort of, you know, it's one of those words where people say, like, you know, I'm so humbled. And you think, like, why are you saying, like, as I say this as a young person, because I remember hearing this as a young person, be like, why are you humbled by this? Everyone's lauding you. Everyone's telling you how great you are. Should be a huge ego boost. What do you mean it's humbling? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's supposed to be. And then as you get older, you go like, oh, that's when you realize that the thing that you were part of is so much bigger than you.
Right.
And that it would never be anything to anyone if there weren't people there who are of, like, beautiful heart and mind and brokenness and openness, and the people who are going to turn it into something that lives outside of you, and then it just becomes so much bigger. And do you know what
no,
I mean? I mean, do
you feel
true.
That way? That's a really
the word
great.
Humbling?
No, but that's a really great way to put things, because you're right. It's humbling because they are taking your experience and they're expanding it to include their own. You know what I mean? Like, they've become part of your psyche in a way, because they feel they're feeling what you wrote down. And so, yeah, I think that's why it's humbling.
It's lovely. Yeah. It's lovely. So it's extraordinary and so amazing. Now, when you realize that, what were the feelings that came up for you? Were you sort of like, was there there was anything negative about that? Or was it just sort of like, okay, this is my truth. The truth is that I was writing about myself. Or was that, you know, like, okay, well, now I have a whole other thing I got to process. I better get to it.
No, because I don't think people know. People don't assume that, you know.
Right.
That it's so in a way, the author is very shielded, you know.
Yeah.
I'd say that the bigger problem, especially in YA books today, is how do I put this? There's a growing need for authenticity, and that's a good thing, right?
Right.
Of having people write about their own experiences, of holding their own experiences. Right. But the darker side of that is that there are gatekeepers who want to make sure that you only write about what you are.
Right.
And that tends to silo people, you know, in their experience, in their what they want to talk about. And so it was, you know, it's having one of my characters be a trans boy. I have to be really careful not only to get it right, but to find my place within that community, which is of an ally, but not someone who is in there. So not to, you know, I don't want to be a spokesperson for that community because that's not my place. I'm just offering this. But it's, to me, it's all about creative empathy.
Yes.
And if we can extend our vision beyond who we are, then I think that helps everyone, because it just offers a multiplicity of perspectives. You know,
completely.
So that was
It's part of that whole. It's part of this clumsy dance that we are having right now. With, you know, it's like we all want to be at the dance, but like we're not sure when the steps. Like, it's like, did I just crush your foot? I'm so sorry. I did not mean to do that. Like,
exactly.
I want to dance with you. You know, like, because that's and it happens. It happens across the board. You
right.
know.
Oh,
I
shouldn't
have
put
through art.
I shouldn't have put my arms, my hands down there by your waist. I'm sorry. I'll put them by the shoulders next time. Sorry.
I misinterpreted what I thought this dance was. I realize I'm too close. I've gotten too close to you. It's a whole thing.
They started playing Dreamweaver. I thought it was that kind of dance. No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that evolves. And I think that's the other thing that I think, you know, you and I are not young no. people in the sense that we're not 20. We're not about to turn 21. We're not 16. We're not 13. And I don't want to be like, I feel like I check myself all the time, probably to the point of like, give yourself a break, Janet.
Yeah.
But I'm so worried to be the like old fuddy-duddy, yes. like you said. I'm so worried to be the person who's like, this thing worries me. How do I check in with whether it's a good thing to worry about? Because it's also not cool to be like, cool, I guess heroin's cool now. Like, it's not cool to go like, well, someone else seems to think this is fine, so I guess I should. Yet at the same time, you don't want to be the person who's like, well, now I don't know, because in my day we wouldn't have had that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be that person. And that is one of my biggest intellectual struggles and emotional struggles, I think. It's like, obviously I have all my own shit I'm mm-hmm. dealing with, but in terms of how I function and contribute to sort of our Western culture as it exists in the immediate space around me and who is reached by how what I think or how I feel mm-hmm. is like, I don't want to be left behind. I absolutely don't want to. You know, I don't want to be like, well, the internet, now hold on, because people are getting very hurt by, you know?
But at the same time,
like, but they are.
Right.
And so what do you...
And at the same time, jumping into those waters, trying to swim in them, you get to that point where you run up against what you don't know, and yeah. and it can really freeze you into not yeah. doing anything because, yeah. Did I say the right thing? Is that the right way we're talking yeah. about it now? Yeah. It's just changed from yesterday. But it's a good thing. And if you can yeah. allow yourself the grace
yes.
to, you're
yes.
trying, you recognize when you make a mistake and then you move on. You know, you don't make yeah. a big thing out of it. You apologize.
Well, I think that's my favorite thing about the word progressive, right? Mm. Is like when you really think about what that means, and that's not to say it's not been co-opted or that it's not, you know, come to mean something else or whatever. But like to me, what I would like for it to mean across the board is like, that it's progress. That means we're right. not done mm-hmm. and we're never going to be done.
And it's messy.
And that's okay.
Progress
and
is very messy.
It's so messy and stinky and, you know, a little grungy. There are going to be some broken bones, but, you know, are we, who are we as a group of people that are made up of billions of tiny groups of people that are, you know, slouching our way towards Bethlehem or whatever. It's the most grim poem for me ever to, it's like such a grim poem.
I don't think we want to ally ourselves with the creature slouching towards Bethlehem.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. All I'm saying is I want an apocalypse. What? Did I say something wrong?
I'm a rude beast. What can
gosh.
I say? My hour has come at last, okay?
With a gaze as blank and pitiless as the sun? What's wrong with that? Sounds pretty simple to me. Oh my gosh. Okay, so so knowing that you've sort of like there are things that got put away or there are things that you know that you don't or haven't accessed or didn't access, are there
yeah.
things that you remember about like who you and the good news is we've talked so long about this book and I play a game for like the last third of the podcast that you're like basically off the hook. We don't have to even dig that deep.
Great.
But did you feel like were there things that you think about that you can remember as positive like influences or art that spoke to you that you know that helped you feel seen or that you know you sort of could retreat into if things were not great on the surface in your day-to-day as a teenager? Which, by the way, for me,
yeah.
Harold and Maude was...
Oh, really?
Like, my favorite movie as a young person and remains one of my all-time favorite movies. And
so
the second they went to see Harold and Maude to Hollywood Forever, I just burst into tears. Oh. Like, burst into tears.
I mean, isn't it the perfect movie for, like, fly your own freak flag, you know,
yes.
Be who you want to be?
Oh, it's so timeless in that way. It's so incredibly dated. And, you know, and when I saw it was incredibly dated, you know. I found it as a kid in the 90s and yet, and that's the other thing it's nice to remember and what I loved about your book is like like, I always love on TikTok when people are like, well, I personally am obsessed with Marlena Dietrich. And you're like, you're 12. But then you're like, well, wait a minute. I knew who Marlena Dietrich was when I was 12. Like, there's a continuum, and now there's the internet. So everything is accessible immediately in a way that, you know, we would have to, like, dig through dusty, like, old DVD racks, you know, to, like, try to find this movie that no one had ever heard of. And so to have that accessibility, it's like, oh, yeah, you can totally love Harold and Maude as a 14-year-old today and feel totally seen by it. And it doesn't matter that Harold isn't holding a cell phone, just like it doesn't matter that Harold didn't have, you know, three-way calling like I did, you know, as a teenager. I was like, I don't get this guy. What's the story? Why are his lapels so big? You know, it's like, no, that's not what we're talking about here.
Because
we're talking about,
it's universal, yeah, right? That feeling of being an outsider, being terribly depressed.
Absolutely. Plus, there are things that, you know, Maude invented that they still don't exist. I mean, I don't know of a place where I have a machine where I can just smell all the smells. I can't smell like a snowy, you know,
snow.
New York street.
Remember that.
It's so good.
Snow.
So was there that for you? Oh my God, I'm talking so much in this episode. It's my worst. I'm over talking.
Well, no,
ever.
And I apologize because I have a tendency to default to Barbara Walters. It's a very insidious, sneaky, self-protective.
What about you?
Yes, I do that all the time. It's like all of a sudden people are like, "Wait, I asked one question of you, and it's been 2 hours later, and I've been talking about my entire past." So, it's not you. It is me. It is my own bugaboo.
Glad to know that.
I'd say because I don't know. I find that my high school was. And I think other people would not say the same thing who knew me then. But I feel like I was largely a shadow just because I was gay, but I didn't know. Like when I was growing up, you couldn't be. There was no such thing as children and gay, right?
Yeah.
Like gay was these men with handlebar mustaches who are, you know, screwing around on the docks, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or in bushes and trees, you know, in parks and stuff. So there wasn't anything for me to latch onto. There wasn't a Love, Simon or a Heartstopper or anything that you could say, oh, that's me. So I think I was on hold for most of my high school.
Well said.
You know?
Well said.
Going through, and I think I was known as someone who was funny, but not really being present because there was always that little, that was a huge compartment that I was hiding and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't enter into what everyone else was entering in because I wasn't interested in that, you know? So I didn't come out until I was like freshman year of college and that's when, you know,
just to circle back on that for a second. So when you say it was on hold, how, because, you know, again, we have this sort of great look in perspective from when we meet Jules and understand that, again, like it's so different for so many people and remains that today that there are still kids who are, you know, just living in a place or an environment
or
just in the place in their own head where they just don't. You know, it's not there yet, because it's not safe for it to be there, or because maybe they're just developed differently. You know, it's so hard because when we have something about us that's quote unquote different from the quote unquote average, like we don't know. I think you spend your whole life doing this. Is like you don't know what's that and what's just normal.
Yes,
like normal.
Right.
It's like. I wasn't comfortable with my sexuality at all until I was 18, and maybe that's because I'm queer. And then somebody who's straight as an arrow, cis, is like, dude, I also had like zero sex drive at all until I was 18 and someone smooched me and I was like, hi, like, you know what I mean? And so we don't, but that person doesn't think about it on quite the same level because they don't also have these other variables that make them feel other, that make them feel like, you know, who do I talk to about this? Or what is this? What's the shape of this?
Right.
So that's another thing, right? Is like,
it's amazing. That's why, as bad as the internet can be, it does give you, like, somebody can find things. Someone can find their community. Whereas before, you were just in your own, you know, your own town, and you didn't know anyone who had the same sexuality as you or anyone who was questioning. So you definitely felt like you were weird. You were so different that you couldn't speak of it, you know, that it was a bad thing. So that's why it's so good to be able to write a positive love story. I mean, probably a lot of that is me kind of reliving my high school and wishing, oh, I wish I could have had that.
Yeah, you know? I get that.
Which means I'm in arrested development for my 16 to 17 year old self.
No, you got paid even $1 to do that. Therefore, it's not arrested development. That's art, baby. That's your job. Totally different. We get to be cartoon characters. That is our job. Yeah. It doesn't mean that we're also just children who are excited to like play with other kids.
I'd say books. Going into, you know, Stephen King books and where there's horrible monsters and yet you can, you know, usually by the end you can fight them. Lord of the Rings and Dune, science fiction, fantasy. Those are all refuges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're such big themes and they create these all-encompassing worlds where if you're a kid who, and even if you're not, but if you're a kid who isn't feeling like this reality is doing much for them for one reason or another, you know, how amazing to have the gift of someone who's like, step in here, you know, and to really feel like, oh, I was there. I mean, I remember when The NeverEnding Story came out and, you know, going and seeing it in a theater and just the electric feeling of all the people, not just kids. I mean, it's not a perfect movie, but the feeling that they did. I do feel like they capture, and certainly in the book, which I loved just as much, probably more. But when he's in that, you know, dark room all by himself and he opens that book and it's real. And, you know, it just, that's so identifiable for so many of us because it's that there are these amazing retreats, that these Edens that we can go into, and the stakes are so much higher than our own stakes, even though our stakes feel as high as those stakes. So it's like, oh, I'm being recognized. They recognize that this is just this monster is like my fear, you know, or the way that those things kind of stand in for real life, quote unquote, smaller stake stuff. It's like,
and you get a fluffy dragon dog as well.
And you get a fluffy yet weirdly pearlescent, scaly dragon dog. Mixed feelings about
I thought that would be your origin story for why you love dogs so much. No? I always wanted
it's
one of those.
I don't think it's Falcor. Because I do remember being a little weirded out by how he had fur.
And scales.
But unless I'm mistaken, there is the sort of like Mother of Pearl Lee press-on nail kind of scaliness to part of him. And that was like a weird, that was like, wait, both? Like I almost would have been better if it had just been all scales or just all fur, but baby, that's not how we are.
No.
We could be a little of everything.
Exactly.
So
you need to be a little more accepting.
I need to be more accepting. I'm realizing now I had a bias against the scale and fur combo, even though I love the replicants from Blade Runner and there was some different stuff going on there. But yeah, so I love that you and it's and the Stephen King thing is really interesting because it is, you know, what like. There is just so much like straight white male energy to to his stories.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, he's tapping into something that is so much more universal than that.
Right,
and
it's like, but it's also, you know how in The Shining the father is the, you know he's tapping into kind of primal. Fears that you have of your father wants to kill you, you know, things aren't safe at home. Your parents can't help you, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Ugh. It is the. Quintessential.
Wait, though. Did you read the book?
It?
Yes. Have you read it recently?
Yes, and I know.
Oh my
like
God!
A,
it's
I know
horrible.
The,
it's
I know
a horrible
the,
book.
The,
It's a horrible book.
Okay.
I mean, let's just set aside the
massive problem.
The massive problem of, yes, many teenage boys and one girl.
Right.
If we just set aside that, if you read it, I'm sure he was doing cocaine during that period because or he was being written by, like, he would describe like every single thing in a bathroom sink, you know, behind the mirror. He was like, and there was NyQuil, and then there was Dimetuscin, and then there was, and I looked at it and it was soap and there was a razor. I'm like, are you being paid by the word? What is going on here? I had to do it. I had to read it an audiobook for a learning ally. And at some point, I just gave up. And I just like it completely
really
flat because
funny.
I was so incensed by...
That is so funny. I'll tell you, I got to be honest, and I wish that I were cool enough to say that I didn't notice that. I probably listened to the audiobook version of it maybe 8 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And I listen to audio, like, if I'm listening to an audiobook that is that long, I feel very comfortable, like, putting it into, like, a pretty fast speed because I can listen very, very quickly.
Oh.
So all of that stuff, just, like, I don't even remember that. All I remember is just the wash of the idea of kids being there for each other when the adults are useless. Like, that is the sort of, I just sort of got that wash and, like, skipped past that scene. But what an odd.
What can we
thing.
Do to inspire courage? Well,
I know. And maybe that's wishful thinking. Maybe it's like, because I had the same thing that other people had, which was I 100% forgot that existed. Like, I put it, like, my tiny kid brain who read those kinds of books way too young because I just got my hands on them, like, I erased that. Like, I had no idea that existed. Someone tried to tell me, like, but you know that there's that whole scene in the book. And I was like, no, I don't know. I was like, I must have read a copy that wasn't in.
Censorship does
work. And that's
work.
The reason I listened to the audiobook is that I hadn't read it since I was, like, literally, like, 11.
Uh-huh.
And so I listened to the audiobook and I got to the part. I was like, oh,
yeah.
No, I'm sure this wasn't in the book I read. You know, it's like, get it. I don't know how to tell you this, but selective memory, my
yes.
friend.
No, I mean, if I had never read another Stephen King after high school, I would have thought the same thing. It just I happened to revisit it.
Uh-huh. But,
yeah, but he was really important. And he was the first kind of author that was doing interesting things with, like, phrasing and how to write down stream of conscious, you know, thoughts. He was good.
Well, he was contemporary, and then I'm gonna stop talking about. We don't need to give him. He's fine.
He's fine.
He doesn't need a book plug. To talk about him or how good about he was. But he gave you that feeling that, you know, as a young person, he was like, this adult, like, I can read adult books. Like, this grown up gets me. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he's cool, I'm cool. Like, we're cool. There's a sort of, which is kind of a peculiar place to be if you're not setting out to write a YA book. That I've just talked about this recently on my podcast with someone else, so I won't drill it in. But, like, what does it feel like to be a Tori Amos, where you're like, oh, I have hit something. I've hit an age group that I wasn't necessarily going, and I can't speak for her. Maybe she was. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, her music, I don't need her music, but I sure needed it when I was, you know, 22. I needed it. I don't need it anymore. It doesn't speak to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it would be interesting to, if you are not setting out to reach a certain generation and you reach them anyway, and you're like, why don't, it's weird. It's like, I never see anyone my age at my shows. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wonder what that feels like. It's not a good or bad thing. I just wonder. And I think, you know, Stephen King's fine. He's everyone of all ages reads his book, blah, blah, blah. But for me, it was about, you know,
all right,
like,
I'm not
being a kid who thought I was, like, in the club of grown-up books. Does that make sense?
Yes, but now let's do the inverse.
Okay.
All right. So what's your relation with YA books?
Oh, I love them. As an adult, I love them.
Isn't it interesting? Because YA books reach this audience that I don't know that they intended to, but... Yeah. And I myself, I'm as snobby as the next person about, oh, this is literature, this is not literature. And yet, like, I'll read Heartstopper, which is now the Netflix show, you know? And it completely consumes me and I obsess over it.
Yeah.
There's something about YA that is like, it mainstreams emotions right into your vein, right?
And that's why this podcast is this podcast, because I think you hold on to that.
Oh.
You hold on to that, even if you're not holding on to the specific memories, there's something that stays with you. And it's not arrested development. It's just the empathy that you grow to have for yourself as a younger person, as an adult. And I don't think that ever goes away. I think that it's that particular time in life is so
fraught.
It's so fraught. And it's so, and I feel like it cements emotionally in you in a different way than like any other age.
Isn't that true?
And so it doesn't, it makes sense to me that those books that, you know, a book like yours, there is no part of me that's like, I mean, it is a YA book. Like, not at all. I only say YA, frankly, because I feel like people are more interested when they
hear
it's YA. I think, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a YA book. It goes in that genre, but also like, I think every adult I know is like, oh, I'll read a YA book. Like, it's like, there's like, ain't no shame in that, you know?
Yeah,
it's so, and yet you want younger people to read it too. So it's like, great, let's call it a YA book, like with Korra or Avatar. Call it whatever you want. It's going to find the audience that it deserves, and that audience is every age.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, it just, when Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda came out, which is that the book that Love, Simon was based on.
Yes, yes.
I just remember I read it twice. I listened to the audiobook and I just couldn't, because you're going into that world. You're revisiting your own adolescence, but it's going to come out in a better way. You know what I mean? Like, it's
absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Do you sometimes wonder whatever happened to the kids at your school who really loved Star Trek?
You might remember a kid like me, the one who read the Star Trek novels and built starship models. I also took music classes to avoid taking gym classes that required showering after, but I don't see what that really has to do with...
Or a kid like me. I introduced myself to kids at my summer camp one year as Wesley. But when the school year started and some of those kids were in my new class, I actually had to explain to my friends that I had tried to take on the identity of my favorite Star Trek character. The shame haunts me to this day.
I'm sure some of those Star Trek fans from your childhood grew up to have interesting and productive lives, but we ended up being podcasters.
On The Greatest Discovery, you'll hear what happens to two lifelong Star Trek fans who didn't grow up to be great people, but just grew up to be people who love jokes as much as they love Trek.
So listen to our new episodes every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to finish up with this MASH game. MASH stands for mansion, apartment, shack, and house.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so first category, for example, is let's do three books that you can jump into and sort of just be in that world and be with those characters. You're not reliving the plot. You can stop the time in that place whenever, you know, however you want it. It's just like, I can hang out in the Shire before, during, or after this thing happens. Doesn't matter. Three books that you can jump into and just sort of be in that world and get the emotions those books give you. And by the way, it is really hard to answer off the cuff for like heavy duty stuff. So we all understand and accept that this is like, in this moment, my answers are these.
Okay.
In
so you
five
won't,
minutes,
so you're saying you won't judge
different.
Me for?
Zero judge.
Okay.
Zero judgment.
All right. Wrinkle in Time. I would like to, I mean, I don't want to be in, I want to go with Mrs. Watson wherever she's going. I'd like to go to the planet Ixchel, probably, because that's where she... What? Oh, my...
It's
that's
a necklace.
That is the copy that I had.
It's a necklace that is, like, pretending to be the book.
You are Meg Murray.
That book is my Bible.
Is it really?
I don't have a... I don't believe in the Bible, and there's some religious stuff in there that... meh. But that book, that was my... That was my Harold and Maude before there was a Harold and Maude. I read that book over and over and over and over. It's the book that I feel it's the book that taught me like how to express compassion. You know, I still like I have talked about the first like year of my podcast. I compared everything to A Wrinkle in Time. Just the whole idea of like she doesn't have. I'm going to cry. She doesn't have the strength and the might that it has.
Right.
But she can love Charles Wallace.
She has love.
She can sit there and she can stand there and she can love him. So, and the idea, you know, that is what breaks you through. That filmy red that we all find ourselves being dragged into in our darkest moments. You know, it's just like, it was a life changer for me. And the idea of what a star is, all of that was like, we can all fight the dark thing.
Right.
We can all fight the black thing, you know?
Unless they banned the book, of course. But,
oh my God, don't even.
No, wait, fun fact. I did a stage adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time, which is one of four that is licensed by the Madeline L'Engle estate.
Oh, I would have loved
see,
to
that's
see
why
that.
That's there. We have a similar.
We do,
you know,
we do. We felt it.
Yeah,
we felt it. Pretty
so
good,
yeah,
I
would love to.
That.
I would love to fly on Mrs. Watsit, right?
There with you,
and be with that land where all the flowers are like kind of singing, and they smell amazing.
Yes,
and you can be on her wings that are like rainbows.
Yes,
right. We'll go together. It's
and
okay.
also, and also, in my higher power. Not that I'm in a program, but I sort of have like I've sort of like had it around me my whole life for like lives that have been saved of people I love by the programs.
Mm-hmm.
But she's definitely my higher power. Aunt Beast is my higher power.
Oh, Aunt Beast!
It's a furry blind creature that. When your whole body and heart are aching and frozen, she just comes and she wraps herself around you and she warms your fingers and you're kind of mad at her for a minute because you're mad about something.
And she will.
And she just
but
goes,
she won't be yell back at you. She will
she
just
won't
hug
engage.
You.
She just, right?
She realizes the trauma inside you and she needs to warm it away.
Yes. You're my new best friend. You're my new best friend. Okay.
Okay.
Wrinkle in Time.
I would like to go to the Jungle Book, but not the time when Shere Khan is around, but just to be able to be around Bagheera and all the wolves and be able to speak their language.
Yes.
Without the carnivore trying to stalk you.
There's only the safe and good and wonderful unless you want otherwise. Okay, great. What's number three?
number three, I guess I would like to have experienced Barbary Lane from Tales of the City.
Yes.
Just to be young and to have met Miss Madrigal and to have had those kind of open experiences and be unafraid to partake of them.
This is getting so old, but I just want you to know that I moved to San Francisco because I was in love with the city, didn't know anything else about it other than that I felt called there, could not have like consumed Tales of the City more, love the actual little Barbary Lane that Armstead was inspired by, like wanted to go all the places, was like, ooh, the Safeway and the marina is kind of the same.
Wait, did you feel like a Marianne? Having just
moved
there?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I guess I kind of did.
Yeah. I mean,
I certainly moved there a lot more evolved, like sexually and stuff than a Marianne.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely identified with her. But I also felt like, you know, part of me was Mouse and part of me was, you know, there's a lot of great characters in that.
Wow.
All right.
Okay.
I gotta stop trying to show off to you
No, that's bond. We're bonding.
Flower.
We're book bonding.
But it's definitely bonding. Okay. Next one is I gotta do this for any Avatar fans who are listening. Let's do three Avatar characters that it would be fun to sort of like get to hang out with for a day.
Fun?
And that can mean anything. That could mean like, look, Azula's. I'm in a safety bubble. She can't hurt me. I just get to sort of like get up close to that energy and just.
No, that energy is so toxic.
Is really interesting.
No, it's just too toxic. It's just no. That would be too much. Like that'd be too much like home.
Right up there.
It would be too much like home.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Definitely Toph. Yeah. I like her insouciance.
Yes.
And her. Easy ability to do stuff.
Absolutely.
I got to hang out with Zuko just because he's really cute.
Yep.
And maybe he'll, you know, that bad boy will fall for me. Maybe. Maybe
he
I
might.
Can, you know. Who
he
knows?
Might.
And who else? Well, I guess I would like... Oh, this will work with Zuko, too, because then I can hang out with Uncle Iroh, and he can kind of, you know, be the benevolent uncle that I never had.
Absolutely. Okay. Next one. Three places in the world that you would love to have a second home if we could just teleport you there.
Hawaii, the Big Island, on the Kona side.
Yep.
That would be lovely. Thank you. And can you get me a place that doesn't erode and fall into the
Done.
Ocean? Thank you.
Or Done.
Okay. 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 And then from there, I guess I would go to Vietnam and have a place probably southern, maybe in the southern area, maybe Ho Chi Minh City.
Great.
And then I can eat a lot of great food. And the last one would be Rome.
Great.
And that's also for the food.
Great. Okay. Next one is three plays that you get to play any character you want in. And it's almost like a sort of Mrs. What's-It situation where, you know, you may not be a straight woman, but there's something about this character that calls to you.
Oh, or, honey, it's going to be all women.
Bring it on. All my answers were always men. All my answers were always like, okay, I would want to play Mercutio. I would want to play, yeah. Great.
Medea?
Give them to me.
Medea? I would love
yes,
to play
indeed.
Medea. Oh, here's a part that's not, that is somewhat feminine. I never got to play Song in M. Butterfly.
Yes.
And that was such a great role.
Very special.
Yeah.
Very special.
So there you go. And the third, who would it be? I have no idea. okay, go to Shakespeare. Shakespeare always has the good characters.
That's right.
This is another guy. So Richard II.
Oh, great.
He's very, you know, ambivalent about everything. I like that. I guess great. I should have said Hamlet, though. Shouldn't I have?
I mean, I don't know if I would want to play Hamlet.
Why?
I gotta be honest with you. I mean, I don't know. I think he's so famous, and there have been so many takes on him. Uh-huh. Although when I was younger and that movie, oh my God, what was Outrageous Fortune? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Shelley Long is obsessed with playing Hamlet. I definitely identified with that and was like, I'm sure I'll also play Hamlet someday, Shelley. Oh my Lord. Okay. No, I was more of like obsessed with playing Puck, which I did get to do. Like definitely wanted to be the sort of androgynous.
Well, that was...
Could be anybody.
Oh, wait, let me tell you a really quick androgynous Shakespeare story.
Please.
I was doing The Tempest in an outdoor theater in Oak Park, near Chicago. Oh, this is the one thing that haunts me to this day. So, you know, at the very end, and there's a series of like wooden platforms and they're slightly sloped and then stairs and then another platform and then the ladder that takes you over the other side. So it's outdoors. It's the very end where Ariel gets set free and he says, fly my chick or whatever. And then Ariel's like, I am free. And then he's supposed to like go off into this great, you know, burst into the air. Right.
Uh-huh.
And I'm supposed to like, jump on this platform, climb the steps, jump on another platform, and then somehow just make my way over the ladder. So I go to the first set of stairs, and I trip. And I fall flat.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, that was so bad.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
You know, you just stumble, and then you fall.
That,
and you're like,
yes.
that will stay with me for a very long time.
That's a delightful and sweet fiasco, a theatrical fiasco. Like, no, not everyone's heart broke for you. You know, everyone's
but
like,
I want anyone to pity me.
If I know, none of us want that, but we appreciate you appreciate that the energy from the audience is almost universally. If I could have undone that and given him what he went for, I would. Like, that's a lot of goodwill. Okay.
All right.
Next category, let's do three skills that we're going to sort of give you that you've almost downloaded Matrix style. Like, you wake up tomorrow, what three skills, you're going to end up with one of them in the end. That's up to me. Three skills you would love to have that either you have and you would love to be a genius at, or that you're like, I could never even try to do this thing, but I'd love to be great at it.
I'd love to learn Japanese.
Great.
I would love to learn how to, like, hammer something into a piece of wood without the nail kind of going crazy and making little worms on the outside of your outside of your board.
Carpentry.
Yeah, because I'm so
master
very bad.
Carpentry.
I'm so bad.
Yeah.
And I would like to be someone who can make sushi at the drop of a hat.
Love it. Speaking of food,
yeah.
Three foods in this reality that we're creating, this alternate universe, there's no ramifications to the earth, to you, nothing caloric, nothing damaging, no hurting of animals, anything. Three things that you're going to be able to have at the snap of your fingers, however much you want.
Oh, that's easy.
Doesn't mean you're eating it all the time and only that.
Right.
But three things you would love to have whenever you want.
Barbecue.
Great.
And lots of barbecued ribs. Thank you. And yes, barbecue. Dim sum. Like a cart that has, you know, the carts are going to come by and they're going to be everything on there, that even the ones that you can't find, you know, usually. Because dim sum is so much. Yes, dim sum and pasta. All the pasta I could eat.
Yes, indeed. Okay, I got two categories left. I'm going to throw this in there. MASH, when you're playing this as a young person, there's always some element of romance or companionship. So three people, it can be characters from books, movies, cartoons, real life, you know, celebrities who are long gone, but that you love the era of this when they appeared in such and such. Three that you would love to have some temporary romance, sexy times with, or long-term companionship, whatever you want.
And so this is this is in the multiverse where I don't have a husband?
Correct.
Okay.
This is a multiverse where I don't think your husband exists. I mean, it's just a multiverse. It's a multiverse situation. So he's literally isn't there. So we got to just like give you something to tide you over.
Okay. So yeah. So I guess I would say, Keanu Reeves, around the time of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yes.
Jason Lee, do you remember him?
I do.
In his Jungle Book. Can we be in the Jungle Book? He could be my Mowgli. How about that?
I love it.
And, who did I? Peter Frampton.
Amazing.
Come on. Amazing. I just looked at that album cover, you know, where he's in that pink glow and his lips are slightly parted and his pants are so very tight.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. And then the last one is three artists. Now, this could be it's art in any of its forms, living or dead, that you would love to collaborate on something with. And you don't even have to know what that is. You could say, you know, I love this painter. I have no idea what we would do together, but I would want to collaborate with them. But it could also be I would love to write a play with Oscar Wilde or whatever. So three artists of some kind that you would love to collaborate with, and time and life and death are of no consequence.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not a thing.
Neil Gaiman. I'd love to enter into a fantasy world with him and kind of create something.
I mean, I could really see that happening.
Oh, that would be so good. I would love to collaborate with Ian McKellen.
Great.
You know, would be really exciting.
Hell yes.
We can edit out silences. That's great. There's a there is a theater troupe called, it's a French one, something La Complicité, where they do a lot of physical activity. And,
cool.
And you know, they create the whole world with just like a board and a pipe, and you know, they create everything. Théâtre de Complicité.
Okay. Théâtre de Complicité.
So I'd like to kind of be in their troupe.
I mean, I don't even know their work, so I'm going to have to do some research.
Oh, it's so amazing. It's so amazing.
Okay. Oh, that's exciting. Okay, give me a number between 1 and 7.
8. Oh.
Yep. No. I love you. I'm absolutely using it. I can't believe how fast you knew that, and then but you didn't do it on purpose. That is like so beautiful. That's so beautiful. Okay. I'm going to use that number to determine which of these in each of these categories you're going to end up with in your 100% guaranteed alternate universe future. I would love for you to use this time, again, we can edit out silences, so if you run out of talking, that's also fine. But will you please tell people, again, we'll just reiterate the name of the book, which is absolutely not Electric Boogaloo, and and where they can get it, and your previous book. I'd love for you to, any plays that, you know, anything that you would like people to find or follow you or know about, this is a great moment to reiterate that stuff.
All right. My book is called All Kinds of Other. It was published by HarperCollins, so you can get it most anywhere. If you have a local bookstore, you can order it there. The paperback just came out in May, and it has some bonus material. It has an extra chapter and it's filled with joy. It's a chapter of joy. I'll send you.
Oh, thank God.
My previous book was Still Life, Las Vegas. It's a hybrid graphic novel / literary novel. And I'm at SeaWorld, SeaWorld.com. And you can find me there. And, you know, I'm also on Instagram. And I try to avoid Twitter as much as I can. So, yeah, not there.
What's wrong with toxicity? Okay. okay. Here is what I'm about to tell you, I'm feeling pretty good about.
Right.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on, this is funny because while you have a home in Ho Chi Minh City, you know, somewhere thereabouts,
yes,
in South Vietnam, that goes without saying. Obviously, you have a second home there. You are going to speak Vietnamese. So you've got Vietnamese, obviously, you've got English. Perhaps you have something else going on that I don't know about. You had a very, very nice accent français. But you also are fluent in Japanese.
Wow.
So fluent in Japanese. I want to congratulate you on, again, MASH stands for Mansion Apartment Shack House. It is an apartment in Vietnam. It's not a shack. It's not a mansion. Who wants a mansion anymore? Not me. You have this extraordinary opportunity to enjoy a collaboration with Sir Ian McKellen.
Oh, cool.
I hope that you're still able to do that. I know you're going to be very busy portraying Song in Madame Butterfly and M. Butterfly. So you have that. You also, I got to save it. You have a friend in the delightful and sage Uncle Iroh. Who I have a feeling is going to be hitting you up for some of your endless guilt-free barbecue ribs.
Ooh.
I feel he's going to get in on that for sure.
There'll be a
I feel
tea,
he would have gotten in on the pasta
rub
and the dim sum as well.
There'll be a little matcha.
Yeah, he's
going to
be like, what is the perfect tea for barbecue ribs? Ginseng. And you also have the ability to jump into A Wrinkle in Time. And somewhere in all of this, you're managing to find out just how tight those pants are on Peter Frampton, because you also got him as your plaything in this alternate MASH universe. I'm very pleased.
I am so pleased.
I see a lot of delicious food in your future because you have a lot of locations that also offer delicious food. I'm getting hungry.
Will you come with me to The Wrinkle in Time?
Oh, I thought you'd never.
We'll eat the ambrosia.
Oh, it's going to be so great.
Okay. Oh, good. Good.
And when we start to get a little breathless, we can dip our face into flowers that somehow just give us oxygen and life.
We both had crushes on Cal, didn't we?
For sure.
Okay. So maybe he can come and we can kind of, you know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Absolutely.
We'll see.
Absolutely. I'm great with it. I think I might have also had a crush on Meg's mom because she's like so beautiful and so down to earth. You know, they really make her like the perfect lady.
Perfect
and
mother.
A scientist, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This has been more than a joy. I know it. That is so, I'm so transparent. There is nothing. What if I was like, now this was a letdown, but hopefully people will read your book or whatever. No, this, I feel so lucky to have stolen this much time from your Saturday, and I want you to go spend it with your family. But, and maybe a bird that I may have heard in the background that yes. I feel like is your actual, maybe a bird or two. But thank you so much for doing this.
Oh,
and
thank you for asking me.
I'm so happy that we're in each other's worlds. And it's hilarious that it's the cabbage merchant that initiated that. But it's starting to feel like it would have happened whether or not that existed. Somehow I would have found you.
I'm glad to have found you too. So
you're wonderful. Okay, everyone. Well, I will. I always forget to do this, even though I've been doing this podcast for as many years as I have. If you have any working knowledge of the Don Henley song "Boys of Summer," that is the sort of theme of my summer when I have male identifying folks on. So, if you can think of any of it, I want to welcome you to try to sing whatever snippet, even if it's like. Have you ever even heard it?
No.
I think it's for the best.
Okay.
I think it's for the best. That's why I've mostly retired it.
Ask me any Joni Mitchell song. I could certainly, you know.
Would you stop it? Please stop doing this. Don't.
We could croon together, Ladies of the Canyon.
I am so angry. That's the only stuff. That's all I learned to play on guitar. And her tunings are all
crazy.
Weird and wonky. But yeah, super obsessed with her from, you know, childhood on. Like, what an amazing woman. My current favorite Joni Mitchell song for the last, like, 5 years is Hijira. That is my current favorite song.
Me too.
No, it's not.
It is.
No, it's not.
I love Hijira.
No, it's not.
Yes. Actually,
because of those,
because
of those lyrics.
My husband, when we got married, he brought a guitar player to the reception, and he sang Hijira for me. So
I'm getting chills.
It was great.
Of course you do.
Yeah, because, of course. Like, wait, though the song is about, like, you know, being in between relationships, so I don't know why he thought that would be a good one, but he knew I loved it. Right? Yeah,
because he knows it's the idea of, you know, it's the from the forceps to the stone. It's the existential heartache and joy of being a human that song captures, that is so far beyond the reach of relationship, just one romantic relationship, that it's like, it's about everything, you know? yeah, that I can't, like, every time I try to sing along with it, I start crying, and then I'm like, I'm like, no, this is really dumb. Like, you should be able to get through a song without crying. I got that from my dad. He can't get through. I mean, he was teaching Cyrano with tears streaming down his face in high school.
Hey, and so, if you can get all of the lyrics to that, just singing extemporaneously, that's pretty good.
Wow. I get the verses mixed up because they don't necessarily go in an order.
And Song for Sharon is also like that, where you're like, wait,
so good.
Where does that go?
Yeah, exactly.
Woman ring goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Wow. Okay. You're wonderful. This has been amazing. Everybody else, I forgot that this was a podcast, so I hope people have enjoyed listening to this as much as I have enjoyed making it. I'll talk to you all next time. Thank you, James.
Bye. Thank you.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is "Back Before We Were Brittle" by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees, or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should move someplace new and build time machines to go.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.